Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, it's Kerry Hines, and we've missed you. The Hair Radio Morning Show is back live with the biggest rollout of new episodes, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. Join Nicole Marie, Michael Hopkins, and me for great, great guests, the latest in hair and beauty, new live co-host chat, and amazing Afrolock magazine stories. So if you are talking about it, so are we. Again, that's the Hair Radio Learning Show. It's all about hair, beauty, and community. And you should be.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Kerry Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carafe Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Oh, come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Brothers gonna work it out.
Brother's gonna work it out.
Brother's gonna work it out.
Brother's gonna work it all night.
Brother's gonna work it out.
Brother's saying, stop the pimps, the hustlers, the pusher man, that's
everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
The Hair Radio Morning Show. We're making black progress. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I'm so excited. I really am, because this is
It's a reflection, really, of you, of our incredible fans from literally around the world. Folks often ask me, well, Carrie, where do you get the ideas that you get for stories or for articles that you include in the magazine and that you include in AfroLock? And for us, and we call AfroLock AM, just so that you're aware. AfroLock, let me just for everybody who's never heard of it, AfroLock is spelled AfroLock. It's one word. Technically, for us, yes, of course, it means Afro like Afro hairstyle and lock like a lock of hair. But for us, it really indicates, has a secondary meaning. AfroLock for us really means that we have a lock on Afro culture. And that's what AfroLock means, and that's why it's spelled that way, with A-F-R-O-L-O-C-K as one word. And so for us, this really is indicative of our commitment to our community. That's what this is all about. And I wanted the brand to be more representative of the hair and beauty industry in this way. That, like most of the other lifestyle magazines, they're more so, 20% hair, so to speak, and 80% everything else. For us, we wanted to be 80% hair and 20% everything else. And so I think we've been able to accomplish that great feat at AfroLock Magazine. And doing that by surrounding ourselves with the best that we can find, headed up by me and our incredible folks, our incredible writers that we have, who, they help us to come up with ideas, but also we have an incredible creative base where we pull from. We are always looking and thinking and talking, and because we produce, we're already living in this space with the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we already are plugged in. We don't need a whole lot of other external sources or have to look at look at a whole bunch of other folks to find out what's going on in the hair and beauty industry. We already have our finger on the pulse. And I think we're able to accomplish a lot with that. So AfroLock Magazine has just been doing incredible things. Since we started, literally on the first issue, we were included in one of our media partners, Bob's Black-Owned Beauty Supply Association folks. Just to say thank you and shout Sam Inan out, that they included us as one of the iconic black brands in terms of magazines, on a list that included Essence Magazine, Ebony, Upscale, these folks who have our legendary publications, to have our magazine just coming out the gate, but recognizing the incredible beauty and sophistication of AfroLock Magazine. Which was apparent from the very, very start. So we've just been able to climb and grow, and we have to say thank you to all of you guys for helping us to accomplish those goals. And the best is yet to come. I'm just super excited. So just say again, thank you so much. And AfroLock.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of The Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year. my family's year-long stand completely living off of Black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one Black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few Black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about Black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our Black community my life. The Black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most Black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring Black hair care back. There are great Black hair care companies that exist, Black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the Black community can own the biggest Black hair care brands, that the Black community can own Black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in Black neighborhoods, and Black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a Black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the Black hair care products that only Black people use, and they are not owned by Black people. So I've issued the Black-owned hair care challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-owned hair care challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy Black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a Black-owned company.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at chairwatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
But then it's like, you know, I'm kind of wondering, do they know how Carrie Hines fits into this? Because you have been part of a media, I won't say frenzy, you've been part of the media and made some very, very important inroads and, you know, connections that I think that somebody needs to explore and write about or talk about or tell about. So I'm thankful that you're going to help me look back and kind of document some of the things that you have contributed to media and some of the people and lives that you've touched, because I think it's really important and people don't know because you're so humble. And if you would, just indulge me and share with the listeners some of the things that you do as Carrie Hines.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, we have a very, very special guest with us today. He's from the world of music. You know him well. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome the one and only Mr. Tony Terry. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Hey, Terry.
Yes.
How are you? How's it going?
Well, I'm doing great. It is awesome to have you on the show. We finally got you here. Yes. Awesome. Well, listen, this music, your music, has touched so many folks. I'm raising my hand right now, folks out there. It has. It really has. It resonates with everybody. You've been, you know, you really put the time in, and you've had a remarkable career. So we're going to get into all of that. I'm going to find out what you're doing now. We want to know everything, Mr. Tony Terry.
Okay. All
right.
The unsung version.
There you go. And by the way, I've heard some of that, and I've watched a lot of this and done my little research and all that stuff, so we're ready. The thing that that really jumps out at me, of course everybody knows, you know, just one of your biggest hits, of course, was that amazing song With You.
Mm-hmm.
And but before we get there, I want to talk about the first album.
Okay.
Because
okay.
you had some hits on there.
I did. You know, it was really interesting, my journey to even putting out a first album, because I was, let me give you the succinct version as tightly as I possibly can of what happened. So I had been in New York for a couple of years, and I had auditioned for the off-Broadway show Mom, I Want to Sing a few times and had gotten turned away. And the last time that I went, that I didn't want to go and didn't care if I was in the show at all at that point, of course, I made it.
Wow. And you were probably in the version I saw, too.
I was in with Deatra Hicks was playing.
Yes.
I was probably there. And,
wow.
And so I did that for a few years, and I was about to just kind of, you know, just go home, actually, back to D.C., and I had decided that enough, you know, it wasn't really going the way that I wanted it to, and I was going to go back to D.C. And so maybe a day or two before I was supposed to leave, one of my buddies was like, we're going to see this band. And he took me to the Danceteria, which I don't think is open in New York anymore. And there was the place was packed. And there was this band playing, and they were good. And, you know, I'm young and, you know, cocky probably. And I told him after the set, and he came to ask me, you know, what I thought of his band. And I told him, I thought they were great, except they were missing something. And that something was me. and so he was like, okay, here's your time to shine. So I started singing maybe a Luther Vandross song or something in this packed basement of this club. And this gentleman turned around, who I had never met before, but it turns out he was Ted Currier. And Ted's claim to fame was Atomic Dog that he had produced, and you know, George Clinton stuff. And he was one of the first DJs, if not the first DJs, to do live dance mixes in New York at 92 KTU.
Of course, KTU.
Yeah, back in the day. And but I didn't know all of that at this time. And so he gave me his card and asked me to give him a call. And I held on to his card. I didn't go back to D.C. I held on to his card maybe a week or so. And I called him late at night. I just, you know, figured that he was a musician like me and he was probably going to be working. And so I called him, and he was excited to hear from me, like, what took so long for me to call him? And he invited me to come over to a session he was working on. And I was in East Orange at the time, so I had to catch the bus to the path to the subway to 42nd Street, and then walk up.
See, and I understand that, and most of the folks in New York, New Jersey area, we know what you mean, and especially
right,
if you're in Jersey.
Right. It was a bit of a journey.
Okay.
So I finally get there, and I walk into the studio, and Ted has Parliament Funkadelic in there working.
Wow.
And I am starstruck, mesmerized. You know, I hadn't seen anything like that before. I was a huge fan, I still am, of their work. And but let me say this. I understood what funk music really came from. And I'm just going to leave it there.
All right. I kind of got that. Okay.
I met one of my boys there who actually, his name was Daryl Moe. Daryl Moe was a young musician at the time who was in the very first show that brought me from D.C. to the area, to New Brunswick, actually, Crossroads Theater, where we were doing Black Nativity. And after about 4 weeks in of rehearsal, this young man in the band came up to me and said, "I don't know about these other cats, but you are a star." Wow. And I never thought about that before. I never even considered, you know. I was a part of this crew that had came up to New Jersey from D.C., you know, in pursuit of our careers, in pursuit of our dreams. And but to say that, to think that I was a star, I mean, I was in the ensemble. You know, for so to be picked out by anybody probably at that age and recognize that, you know, something as big as being considered a star would be like, wow.
That's so huge.
Yeah, and something I had not even considered, even though I had been pursuing this thing of being an entertainer for a long time. Didn't never really think be a star. Just wanted to work.
Wow.
And so after the show was over, I started working with him, and we wrote my very first demo. It was called "Don't Hold Back," and he and I, and he shopped it to Ted Currier. I played it for Ted Currier. Ted thought it was a great record, and then that started it. So I came down to the studio, and he had Parliament in there, and he said, Daryl said, "Ted, if you put Tony, if you put my boy in the booth, you'll fire all them jokers." You know, he's like typical New Yorkian kind of energy.
Yeah.
And so Ted was like, "Really? Well, let's see." And I'm thinking, "Really? Seriously, Daryl?" And so he puts me in the booth, sure enough. And
you were ready.
And I was ready, and he did fire Parliament. And I did end up doing that project for the Boogie Boys on Capitol Records called Survival of the Freshest. And it was actually the first R&B album, I mean, the first rap record that incorporated R&B hooks. It started that whole thing. And
that's amazing.
I mean, at the time, I didn't realize it was so amazing.
That is. I didn't. Wow.
And so while I was recording, Ted's wife says, "Tony," she spoke a lot like Michelet. "Tony, Tony."
Oh, okay. Yeah.
His real little mousy voice.
Yeah, no more lies. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, we know her well.
You know, really small voice, and she asked me to come in and sing for this group of people that were in one of the rooms. And I didn't think to be nervous. I was already in there recording. I didn't know who they were, so I didn't have a problem walking into the room and singing, you know, a song for them. And so I did, and it turns out that those people were management at Capitol Records, and they offered me a deal right away. Seven albums.
Holy cow. That's unheard of. That's astounding.
I know.
It kind of was unheard of then. I mean, seven.
It was unheard of then. And,
absolutely.
Which, again, I wasn't, I didn't know that I was auditioning. So I wasn't nervous. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't anxious. I was warmed up. I was ready for this. And that's what happened. And so the gentleman who would be responsible for me in terms of A&R was fired soon after I was signed. And their intention was for me to delve into Nat King Cole's catalog and record and, you know, restructure or find some of these classics. And I was 19, 20, so I didn't
Because he was the main Capitol big-time artist.
But
wasn't
I was
he?
Ignorant
yeah,
to he
yeah.
built Capitol Records.
Right, exactly.
And I was ignorant to that fact at that time.
Wow.
And I was just not interested in recording Nat King Cole's catalog. Now, in retrospect, I think that probably would have been a good idea to consider. I don't know what it would have been, but, you know, at least to give it a shot. But I wasn't really – I didn't think that I had enough – you know, I was like, Nat King Cole, come on, I was 19. So if you can imagine, I just was not in the Nat King Cole frame of mind.
Well, listen, it took Natalie a while herself to record Nat King Cole, to tackle Nat King Cole's music, so I can understand that.
But now, you know, I can hear it. Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. I can hear it.
Wow.
But then I couldn't.
Amazing.
And so the guy was fired, and he was rehired at Epic. His name is Don Grierson, and he convinced Epic to buy my contract from Capitol before I ever even sang it, before I sang a note.
That is amazing.
It's like, wow, so all this money, all these, you know, is it really that much money? Did they really pay that much money to buy me from them in terms of my contract? Because when you say buy me, it kind of sounds a little weird. But
no, we get it. Wow.
Buy my contract. And, yeah, so when I was moved over to Epic, I was there with Michael Jackson, Luther Vandross, Tina Marie.
Wasn't that Sony, or didn't it become Sony or something?
Yeah, it was Sony Epic, and they also had Columbia. At the time, they had Mariah Carey on the other side, on the Columbia side.
Oh, my God.
So it was like, amazing. This guy, they have signed me, and then once they had me over there, they didn't know what to do. Like, well, okay, we got him now. Now what? And it turns out that the head of the A&R department at Epic was Johnny Gill's godfather. And all he talked about was Johnny Gill all day, every day. And so it was clear that I was not going to get his full attention.
You weren't
going to
be, right. Yeah.
And then we put out She's Fly, and it caught everybody by surprise. No one expected it. And there was like, okay, we see something, but not sure what yet. And then it was Lovey Dovey.
She's Fly was a huge, like you said, a huge, huge hit. That's the top 10 hit.
It was. But they still weren't convinced. The label wasn't convinced. And somebody's calling me. I should have had my phone on Do Not Disturb. I'll call them back. I will ignore them.
That's okay.
Anyway,
that's all
anyway,
right.
So it just went on, you know. So we had three singles off of the first album. She's Fly, Lovey Dovey, actually four, and Forever Yours, which was the title cut.
Yes.
And then we had, I believe, Young Love was on that first album as well. And
Lovey Dovey charted even higher than She's Fly, so that's amazing.
It did. Okay, so now it's time for the second album. And the first.
But were you nervous, though? Because everybody always says about the sophomore thing, or what is it, the sophomore slump thing and this and that.
You know when they say ignorance is bliss. I didn't know anything about all of that. I did know it as it related to theater, because usually opening night is the adrenaline.
I never knew that it related to theater. That's amazing.
Because usually the night after opening night is they call it after opening night blues. Because the second night is usually not nearly as good as the opening night. And then it picks
Thank
up.
You
the
educated
from there.
Thank you. Oh, you really have. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why later.
Yeah. It's time to choose the first single from the second album, which was self-titled, was Head Over Heels. And it was time to choose the second single. And I had chosen With You. And the label didn't agree. They called me in for a meeting.
I can't believe they didn't agree. But
they did not
agree.
I mean, they were, I wouldn't say forceful, but you know, they stood where they stood. They didn't think it was a good idea. And I just wouldn't let it go. I was like, nope. I think it should be With You. And they couldn't. And in fact, I remember clearly hearing the president at the time, of the label say, Tone, only Stevie Wonder could get away with a song like this. I was like, yeah, okay, well, let's just see. And so they put it out. But I think that in an effort to teach me a lesson, they put out With You with, you know, back in the day, there was a whole setup. You know, there was a rollout for a single or an artist, you know, the whole setup thing, which did not happen for With You. And it was also
like the promotion that goes along with it when the record is released.
Didn't happen. Your marketing team that actually services radio, which happens on usually one day a week. And if you can imagine back in the day, there were 40 or so major labels. So you have 40 reps from those labels going to, let's say, WBLS, and they probably have only 5 slots for new singles this week. But you got 40 people vying for those 5 slots. Okay. So my record was serviced to radio with no information on it.
just scent?
It was a Blank Label, which to me would have made it stand out even more, because you're getting a plain label, unmarked vinyl 12-inch single from Epic Records. What could that be? That you don't put anything on
it. It might have worked in your favor.
It
yeah,
did.
That's
because
true.
It made,
that's
I, was, I believe it did, because then With You started to live. It started to, without any support from them. There was not going to be a video. There was none of that. And then one day I happened to walk into my manager's office, and the phone was ringing, and maybe our receptionist had gone to the bathroom or something. I don't know. She wasn't there. And I answered the phone, and it was Anita Baker. She was looking for me. And I didn't
Superstar
know Anita Baker.
Anita Baker was calling herself.
Herself. She was like, this is Anita Baker, and I'm looking for Tony Terry. And I'm thinking, get out. First of all, just couldn't possibly be Anita Baker.
Had you guys worked together or anything?
I did not know her.
Wow.
Had never met her before. Had never even had a conversation with her before that moment.
Wow.
And I was a fan of hers, but, you know,
of course,
didn't know her.
Yeah.
So she called, and I honestly did not believe that I was speaking to Anita Baker. But I went along with it. Okay.
Right.
But it would have made sense, because she was calling my office, and actually our receptionist would have taken the call, and then it probably would have gone to my managers, and then maybe gotten
it would have gone to
point.
A few folks, right?
Yeah. But I got the call. And
wow.
And then she was like, Tony, this is Tony. I was like, yeah, this is Tony. And she said, I was awakened last night, one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. And I had done The Party Machine, which used to come on after the Arsenio Hall show.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. And she said, what is going on? And I was like, well, first of all, thank you for, you know, calling. I still wasn't sure, convinced that I was talking to Anita Baker. But, I went in to tell her, went on to tell her that, you know, I appreciated the phone call. And, you know, thank you for, you know, enjoying the music, and there was not going to be a video because the label didn't think it was a hit. And she was like, what? Those people wouldn't know a hit if it hit them in the forehead. And she said, she made another comment. I don't know if I should repeat it, but I'm going to say it because she said, I'm on the label with Keith Washington, and Keith could not shine your shoes.
Okay, we might, Keith, if you're out there listening, Keith, we still love you.
I love Keith. He's one of my boys. Nice,
yeah.
What Miss Wade
said
to me.
Yeah, no, we.
And I thought, wow.
Absolutely.
She said, why? What, I don't understand. And so, listen, Tony, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you $50,000. And I want you to shoot the video. I need to see a video. And I was like, what?
Wow.
What am I supposed to, like, how do I pay you back? How do we do this? She's like, don't even worry about it. Just blow up. Just be the star that you are. Just be the star that you are. And, you know, and then the check came certified for $50,000. And she said she was going to call Blair Underwood because she wanted him to direct. Turns out With You was his directorial debut. And he was in it. And, It was, if you've seen the video, it's because.
Seen it? We've worn it out.
Because, you know, yes. I call her my guardian angel because, and you know what's really interesting? Because moving forward 20, 25 years, the Monique Show, which was being recorded here in Atlanta at the WB, I think it was. And I had been on as a guest and performed, and we had heard that Anita Baker was coming, and my mother-in-law is and was a huge fan, and of course so are we. So I contacted the show and told them I wanted to come back and, you know, be in the audience when she came, and they put us on the front row. And so she comes out and she sings her song, you know, and she's all into it. She got her eyes closed, and just at the end of the song she sings, "Sweet love, don't you ever go away," and she opens her eyes and we make eye contact, and she sees me, and I can see her recognize me. I saw that in her in her expression. And then they cut to commercial, and she calls Monique over, and they clearly are having a conversation that I would think was about me because they were looking at me. And, you know, And so it comes back from the commercial break, and Monique says, you know, during the commercial break, Miss Baker told me this story about, you know, giving this brother here, this young man, Tony Terry, and she introduced me, you know, $50,000 to shoot the video for With You. And then she asked Miss Baker, why did you do that? And she said, I was being obedient to the spirit. I was compelled to do it. And I thought, wow.
I'm speechless. That's amazing.
I thought, wow, 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 wow. You know, to first hear the spirit speak to you, and then you move because you felt like you didn't have a choice. You had to do it, or that you would be, you know, not, you know, disobeying, you know, whatever
right.
it was. She
That's
felt
right.
compelled to do so. And I was really moved by it. She never wanted anything back. She just wanted to honor what she was led to do. It was on her spirit to do so, and she did it. And I just thought that was really a powerful thing. And then, of course,
that's amazing. That's huge.
Yeah, huge. And then when With You began to, you know, live, and the video was out, and
yeah.
you know, started moving up the charts, and then of course the label was like, oh yeah, we knew this was a brilliant artist from the very beginning, you know. And then I'm looking at them like, I know you didn't just say
that. That is funny.
And it was then that I learned, or quickly, about the politics, because at that point, even though they had zero interest in the record, I had to let them claim, you know, the responsibility
for
its success, because, you know, if I didn't, if I had made a big stink about it, then, you know, it's just, it's politics. And it's an ego-driven
exactly.
business. And, you know, okay, all right, y'all did it. I'm so glad I'm signed with Epic. Two thumbs up.
Well, that song, I'm just still blown away by the fact that they could not detect that. Well, how can you be an A&R or this or that or whatever it was, a music executive, and without, you know, just not having that little certain something? I mean, I don't understand that.
It didn't fit the song structure of the day.
Of what they had.
It was different. And, you know, the chorus didn't repeat the way choruses typically do on R&B records.
Right.
And I wasn't necessarily, while I was singing my face off, or at least I thought I was, it wasn't in a traditional R&B kind of way.
It wasn't formulaic, which is,
right.
you know,
right.
to them,
right.
you know, so I, okay,
and so
I got it. Wow.
I thought it was, you know, just not a good move to do, and then it turned out to be like it overshadowed
everything.
An amazing
song. Which has stood the test of time.
Yeah. I mean, people, when I sing songs like, you know, Lovey Dovey or She's Fly or Head Over Heels, people are like, oh, I forgot he sang that song.
Exactly.
You know?
But once you hear it, exactly.
Right. You know,
wow.
With You came in and just took over. Just, and then all of a sudden, I was a, you know, this balladeer.
I'm
a crooner.
That song, I could play it like literally a good 3 times in a row. I mean, I just love it so much. And just like all of our, you know, our listeners out there, this is something that's really huge. And, you know, I was watching, I think you did a piece with someone, and it just hit me because these songs really, when people say, and I know, you know, we get a chance to have a lot of wonderful artists like yourself to come on the show, but when we say that our lives are really shaped by your music, we really need it.
You know,
that's really the truth.
And it's not something that I take for granted. I have been asked to sing at homegoing services. At
funerals,
to sing with you. And I'd be like, well,
really?
It's a little bit weird.
Wow.
And then they would say, this was, you know, this was the song that I sang to my child when my child was a baby. And, you know, it was our favorite song. And so then I felt, then it gave it a whole
That's
different
true.
Kind of weight. And, you know, I know that honestly has nothing to do with me. I say to God be the glory, because,
exactly,
you know, I recognize that to have the ability to affect people on an emotional level is
That's
spiritual.
Right.
And,
That's right.
And that does not come from me. It comes through me. And I'm just grateful that I was gifted in such a way that I can affect people. And it's humbling. It's not something that swells me up with pride. It actually is humbling that, you know, that I have it and I'm grateful. And I always say to God be the glory.
Well, Tony, I have to say, just even in you telling the story, I was like, no, I'm thinking to myself, I would have been so upset, you know, just the fact that we might not have heard that record. Like, that is enough to just, how, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to get over that.
Yeah.
But that really tells you a lot, you know. So, folks, if you're just joining us, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, today we have a very special guest with us today. As you know, we always bring you the very latest with some of the amazing artists that are out there. And today absolutely is no exception. Mr. Tony Terry is with us. And we are just so pleased. Good morning again, Tony. And again, welcome to the show.
Again, thank you for having me, Carrie. I love
it.
It's refreshing when interviewers kind of know how to interview because, you know, you have not asked one typical question yet, and I like that.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, I appreciate that. You know, I really do. I have to tell you, and just even kind of going back a little bit, one of the things that kind of got to me a little bit, I saw something where you had indicated that, like, when you kind of were starting out, and you were working, I used to work, like, I'm from, you know, Jersey and Philly and New York and Jersey and all that stuff. So I was aware of the summer youth employment folks. In fact, they still owe me a certificate award to this day. But I remember them, and I heard something, and you had worked for them as well, which kind of was your unofficial paying start in the industry.
Yeah,
and I just love that story so much.
Yeah,
so please tell us a little bit more about that, because that's how you got started.
It is. You know, I was one day watching television, and this super exciting show came on called Fame, about a high school
of
performing arts. And, you know, there were artists, there were dancers dancing in the hallway, there were musicians practicing, you know, on the lawn outside. There were actors working on scenes. There were visual artists painting on the walls inside the school. And there were singers, you know, having voice lessons. And I thought, wow, you can do that in school? It took a minute to process. And then I found out that there was a school like that in D.C., the Duke Ellington School of the Arts.
Amazing.
And the first year I asked my mom, could I audition? Because we didn't live in D.C. We lived in Maryland, in Landover, Maryland. And it would have meant a commute. And the first year I asked my mother, she said, no.
Oh, my.
I mean,
wow.
Unequivocally, no. But what? No. Okay. Because I said so. It was one of those. And and so I didn't. But the next year, I went and auditioned, and I was so green. I had never auditioned before for anything, and I didn't know how to audition. And I thought that I would take a record with me, and I had an album of Jeffrey Osborne.
Oh.
And I was going to sing along with it. That was going to be my audition. That's how green I was.
Wow.
No one told me how to audition for anything. So I go into Duke Ellington. And for my audition, and I say, okay, where's the record player? They were like, that's not how we
right.
do it. And so I was like, well, how do you do it?
Wow.
And so they asked me if I had a song prepared, and of course I did. And I sang it, and I just happened to sing it a cappella, and they let me in.
Well,
I have to say
that is amazing.
They let me in, and I was terribly excited, and then I told my mother I auditioned.
What did she say?
She actually, after I auditioned, I told her, I said, Mom, I'm going to do Gallatin this year. And she said, oh, okay. Like, I probably said it with, you know, like, I'm sure I said it with so much confidence because I was already in.
Right.
And I knew that, you know, like, my parents had supported me my whole life. And they knew that it was, you know, that singing was a passion for me. And so she didn't resist. And I was surprised that she didn't resist. But it meant
wow.
that I was going to have to stay with my aunt in D.C., where she welcomed me with open arms. With
that
her three other children in the hood, in the very seed of the scornful.
She
didn't lose any one of us. Nobody ever went into the system. Nobody ever got in trouble. Nobody ever. So she became this iconic person in the hood because no one messed with her children because they respected her.
I love that. Well, I've got to tell you. Yo, Joe, you go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I went in. I got to Duke Ellington, and it was the best time. It was the time that I learned. You know, we had a longer than normal school day, and we would do academics during the day, and then we would focus on our particular arts in the afternoon. And you know, it was then that I learned about, you know, 8-hour rehearsals and longer. Getting it until we get it right. We're going to do it until we get it right. And then the opportunity to audition for and do the street theater, which Mike Malone, one of the founders of the Duke Ellington School of the Arts, also ran by way of the D.C. Youth Employment Program under Marion Barry, who the city, if he was alive today,
mayor,
he could probably be mayor now if he was alive.
Yeah, didn't even circle back again after some issues and things.
He did.
Wow.
And when he passed away, it was, you know, they shut the city down just to honor him.
Yeah, that was huge. Yeah.
It was huge. I remember that.
Yeah.
And so that was the start. And I mean, and then at the end of my, which I was able to do 2 years of before I cycled out in terms of my age, and Mike Malone, who was one of the founders of the Duke Ellington School, along with Peggy Cooper Kafritz, who were also professors at Howard University, he came to me and he put his hand on my shoulder. I will never forget. And he said, you're ready.
Wow.
You're ready. And you can go. You go to New York with my blessing because you're ready. And I thought, wow, I got Mike Malone's stamp of approval. I mean, that means I'm really ready. And
now let me tell you something. Let me tell you, Tony Terry, it is not easy to get even into the high schools. I myself, real quick, I'm going to just jump right on in and tell you. But no, I applied to the high school. They had just opened the Performing Arts High School in Philadelphia.
Right.
My audition, I was so nervous that I screwed it up. So I never got in. So I just, when I hear stories and folks like you and you know, and Jasmine Sullivan went to the one in Philadelphia. And so it just stays with me so very much. So I love, and I know exactly what you're talking about because
yeah,
I can relate, but
not,
I love
like
that.
Being green and not being ready and nervous.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
the whole thing.
I was staring at the clock on the back of the
Amazing.
Room, at the wall, just trying to get through it, all of that.
Yeah, and I keep hearing Debbie Allen. What was that line? Right
sweat
here.
It starts here with sweat. And
that
it does.
That line, really? Wow.
And, yeah, and listen, and then I found out that Fame, the TV show, while it was set in New York, was actually
uh-huh.
based on what was going on at Duke Ellington.
No, you're kidding me. I never knew
no,
that.
No, I'm not. Debbie Allen was a teacher at
wow.
Duke Ellington School of the Arts.
Really?
Yeah.
Hold it. Is that right?
That's absolutely
wow.
100%, yes.
That says it all, full circle. That's amazing. I did see Leroy, the one that played Leroy, God rest his soul, he passed away, but I remember seeing him out in Los Angeles. I remember hanging out one day, I saw him out there. But
he was still
talented all the way through.
And a live wire, live wire.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you say, Tony Terry, to these folks, you know, to the youngsters who are coming up, and have you had a chance to work with the, you know, the upcoming talent?
Some, you know, actually, that's really, really a good question because I have mixed feelings about encouraging people to enter this business, especially young females, because it is an ego-driven business, and mostly men and women, especially young girls, are taken advantage of more so than not, and they will go as far as to get to the threshold of success, and then nothing, and then they're left to pick up the pieces of their lives and move on, and then to pull it together and find something else to do. When you realize that your dream of being a star is not going to happen, and it's heartbreaking, but it happens more than you would, more than you could imagine. There was a young lady that was trending recently, that was shining a light on a lot of things in the music business, and I do not know her. Jaguar Wright.
Oh, okay. But we've seen her name.
A lot of the things that she said had some validity
to
them.
Wow.
It's really real. And
she tells it like it is. Let me just, for those of you who have not heard of her yet, and a lot of folks have, she really puts it on out there. But
straight no chaser.
Yeah,
straight
she no really, that's all I'm going to say. So, but it's good to know that there's some credence to it, right?
Absolutely. I would not want to I would not want to release my 14, 15, 16-year-old daughter into the hands of, you know, anybody and not be there.
Well, you know, but can we say that back in the day, we just weren't aware of these things? You know, we just heard of an opportunity, and you all, you know, and you would have to think that you're almost, you know, I hate to say, but some of those, the parents, you know, they're getting all this money and stuff, they might have had felt that they needed to turn a blind eye or whatever they call it, you know. It's just heartbreaking, the whole thing,
It is heartbreaking, and, you know, for years and years and years, that kind of thing has gone on, and it's, you know, no one has said anything, and not only the parents have turned a blind eye because they might get a check for $50,000, which might be way more than they even make in a year. You know, $50,000 to someone who has nothing is a lot of money. $50,000 to someone who has money is nothing.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And so, you know,
so
money,
you're reluctant, you know.
I would be reluctant because, you know, I know that, like, a young female artist is really, 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 really tough. And I can't even stress it enough, you know, and I would suggest, you know, never, ever to be in a room alone with men if you're by yourself. I would suggest never drinking in public because, you know, you don't know what somebody can slip into your drink. I would suggest never smoking in public if that's something that you like to do. Do it in the privacy of your own home, in your own space where you're safe, because people generally in this business are not so nice.
Wow. Well, you heard it right from Mr. Tony Terry. Recording artist, superstar. Wow.
And it's a hard pill to swallow because it's a business that I love. It's a business that I love and still have passion for. And, you know, want to, I've been fortunate in that I've been able to continue working, but not for lack of working hard. Because I put in my time, I put in my effort, and it's always about growing and improving and evolving. And never thinking that I know it all. And I'm willing to learn.
Well, you have the best disposition I've talked to in a long time when it comes to the music business, I have to tell you. Tony, I do want to ask you about one thing that entered my mind, and that is the acting part. Now, how did you kind of make that bridge across from the music over to the acting, and then kind of merging the two with maybe the, you know, like Mama, I Want to Sing and all that kind of stuff? How did that come about with the acting?
Well, it actually happened in reverse. It started with the acting. I mean, I grew up singing in church, but, you know, I was trained in musical theater, and, you know, acting and singing to combine.
Goes together, right?
I didn't know that it was going to be the music that would catapult me into, you know, the hearts and minds of people. Because again, for me, it was just about having the opportunity to share. I always call it sharing because it's sharing. It's sharing, you know, with people, the music, the experience. And I just didn't know how it was going to happen. I never really thought about it. I just wanted to be ready for whatever it was. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. But what crosses my mind, see, back in the day, I remember quite often, if you came out as a singer, if that's where you kind of blew up from that, then, you know, I don't know whether it was the public thing or the executives or whatever, they wanted to only pigeonhole. That's all that you got to do was to,
right.
you know, to sing. Or if you start as an actor, then that was it, and they knew
you're
you,
right.
you blew up, that was it. These
right.
days,
you couldn't be a singer if you're an actor.
You could not.
Right.
You could
right.
not.
And right. You couldn't be a gospel singer if you were an R&B singer.
Exactly. That was.
And Aretha Franklin wow. was just kind of like, you know, she just broke the mold because she decided
did.
That, you know, I'm a singer. I grew up in a church. You can't really tell me what I can't sing.
I don't know how they could ever tell Aretha anything. Aretha
right.
was Aretha.
Right.
She was Miss Aretha, right. let me tell you. But I'll tell you, I really, and it shocks me because to me, artists are not usually one-trick pony type folks.
Right.
You know, a lot of folks who are so creative and so talented, they're talented across the spectrum usually.
Yeah.
And so, so these days we get to see that a lot more.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that has a lot to do with, one, the whittling down of all of the major industry. You know,
yes,
there's now probably
true.
Now four major labels.
Exactly. Right.
Pretty much everybody we know has a smartphone and a laptop. And you can get it done in your living room. Anybody can be a producer, if you will, or at least they think they can.
Right.
Not understanding that, you know, the most successful ones are studied and they know what they're
doing. Absolutely.
And it's not by chance. But, you know, people decide that they want to pluck away and then sometimes they come up with some magic. Magic is happening. And with the internet, you have access to the world, just like any major label. And so it kind of levels the playing field in a whole lot of ways. I remember in the 80s, my manager telling me, Tone, it's going to be digital. I'm telling you, it's going to be digital.
Really?
and I'd be like, okay, Bob, I hear you, man, but you have to keep saying it like that.
Well, but that's amazing, though. Back in
yeah.
the 80s, they knew.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. He was like, you better be ready. Better get on board.
Wow.
Better get on board early.
Wow. So these days, because of that, a lot of, you know, way back when you had to shop, you know, demos and this and that to, you know, every label, you know, from here to L.A., nowadays, like you said, you could basically just kind of put yourself on out there.
Yeah, you can.
You know, across
it's
social
just all
media.
About money. You absolutely can. There have been many people that have succeeded just because they were on Instagram or they just, you know, and their video went viral or something. And you know, there are also artists, you know, the world is bigger than the United States. And that's what the internet brings to you. It brings you the entire world. I know of artists that have sold 100 million records, and we've never heard their record one time, not once.
That is amazing.
In America, but you know they're living large, doing well, succeeding, and we know nothing about it. And there are lots of stories like that.
Wow, you are very inspirational, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just bring everybody up to speed here. You know, thank you so much for being part of this, Mr. Tony Terry. You guys, we're listening to the one and only Mr. Tony Terry. He is a music superstar, and we are so honored. Now, I want to talk about your current project. I want to hear all about your new single, what's going on. Tell our listeners.
Right before COVID started, I signed a new recording deal, and it's been actually very stressful from that
Congratulations,
moment.
Congratulations,
too, well,
by the way.
Thank you. However, before I signed my record deal, I'm a recording artist, so I'm always recording. And so I recorded this song called Born to Love You. And I just kind of put it in the pile of other things that I recorded. I'm my own worst critic. So one of my brothers, he tells me all the time, he's like, Tone, man, your worst work is better than a whole lot of people's best work. You got to stop being so hard on yourself. You got to really kind of like loosen up a little bit. But, you know, I am a bit of a, I wouldn't say perfectionist, but, you know, I want it to be right. I want it to feel right. And so I recorded Born to Love You and just kind of put it in the pile. And then I started addressing this new record deal that I had, that had been presented to me. And I'm spending a lot of energy getting this record deal worked out, negotiating it. And in the meantime, I had asked one of my partners who owns the label if he thought this particular record was a hit. And he called me back within 30 seconds. He's like, man, not only is it a hit, but I got you, I want to put it out on my label. And
wow.
So on a handshake, I gave him, you know, a small percentage of the publishing, and he went running with it.
Okay.
And it turned into a hit record for me. And I was over here trying on one side, negotiating to the point of just absolute frustration. And then on the other hand, I have a record over here that's taking off, and I didn't even realize it was happening.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. It's Wednesday morning, August 2nd, 2023. I'm Carrie Hines, yes, and it is Mid-Show. It's our broadcast number 873. Wow, 873 shows as we march to 1,000. Let me bring to the line my co-star, Miss Nicole Marie, out of Water Valley,
good
Mississippi.
Morning.
Good morning again. Yes.
Happy
Hi. Happy. Oh, boy. Yes. How are you this morning? How's it going
wonderful.
Out there in Water Valley, Mississippi?
It's wonderful. It's a warm 70 degrees already this morning. It's going to be another hot one, but it's well. We're doing everything is well here. How about you, Carrie? How are you doing this morning?
We're doing great in New York City. It's all live today. We're so excited. It's about 7:08 in the morning, New York time. Doing okay. Yeah, you know, it's been quite a couple of great days to be back on the air with the Hair Radio Morning Show. Again, about balance, trying to balance
That's
everything.
It.
Between working on this incredible broadcast for our great fans literally all over the globe to everything that's happening in the world. I wanted to just say that we have been just doing it up, working on Afrolux magazine, the new Cali Braids magazine. We will be working on some other things as well in the days to come and announcements and things like that. So
always working
lots
on something
of things,
new, Carrie.
Always got something going on. That's the idea. And it's just really, it's a good thing. We're real excited about it. Real happy. So, yeah, I'm thrilled. Now, I've got to say, speaking of Afrolux, big things on the way. We have the September 1st is the next issue that's going to be out. I'm
right.
super hyped about it. It's the fall issue.
Oh, my.
Can you believe fall?
I know already.
We're looking ahead at fall. Yeah.
It's gone
yeah.
so fast.
Well, here,
time is just moving.
Here in New York, where the kids go, when the kids go back to school, it's pretty much fall here. Well, we like to think of it as fall. Now, what's crazy is that when I was a kid, the weather would be it would still be warm those first couple of days when you go back to school, because we go back in September.
Right.
So it was like September 8th or so. And it starts to kind of cool down. To me, the summer starts to cool down. And I've always you know, been able to notice this because my birthday is in August. You guys know we're going to be having an on-air celebration on the 11th. We don't want you to miss that, and it'll kick off around 8 in the morning. But it's just been that it was warmer. And now, and then so the first week you go back to school, it's hot. And then in a few days, it starts getting cooler and cooler.
Cooling off,
Yes, and I remember being a kid, and my mom, she would buy those beautiful long-sleeve shirts because, you know, we went school shopping. And that first day or two, it was still hot, and I'm sitting up there with my flannel.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was new.
You started out with your flannel shirt?
But it was new. Yeah, I mean, back then, it was actually in style. Here's the thing. We used to have all kinds of weird styles. Some of them have never come back. One of which was the fly shirts, they used to call them. They were all kind of colorful, cartoonish-type shirts designed.
Right.
Others
were
the lumberjack-type shirts. That was in style as well when I was a kid. So we had quite a few different styles. And it was just, it was an exciting time. There was a baggy pants style where everybody wore real baggy pants. And the baggier, the better. Some of the pants were like 3 times our size. Yeah.
Right.
You go through all of that. Never thought I'd see a style called the skinny jeans style. I didn't see that one coming. But anyway,
never
the styles
know what we're
going to
see in fashion. Right. They always change.
Yes. It's always something changing. So I have to say, so the early part of the school season, so fall, we are definitely looking ahead. Afrolock Magazine is there.
Excited
we've been
about Afrolock.
Yeah,
I just can't wait to just see the cover.
I
love the content. Don't get me wrong, but I'm always so excited to see what the cover is going to look like.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my favorite thing to do. It's one of my greatest joys in this business is to work on the magazines. Speaking of which, I've got to tell you, this upcoming cover, which should be released mid-August, so I can't wait until the first. I'm going to try, but the new cover should be out along with the magazine towards the end of the month, and I am so excited. So excited.
Nice.
It's going to be really, really great. Yeah. And we're doing our thing. Then I do want to say it's tied to another announcement. And this other announcement that I kind of want to make, I think folks, speaking of the magazines, I started producing magazines as a way for other entrepreneurs who are looking to embark upon a different endeavor. I'm always thinking of things that can generate resources, generate income, so that you can accomplish your goals. And I have the magazines have been doing so great that I want to help others who have a desire to try something new that's going to be financially sound, and that is to embark upon a magazine career. Now, most of us are not graphic artists, and most of us are not design experts, and most of us are not writers and producers and all of those things, and content-driven with contacts and connects that can make things happen immediately. Well, the good news is we are here at Hair Radio and Afrolock and Magazine, and I'm so excited because we are opening up this new opportunity. So it's very little investment on your part, yet it'll make about 2 to 3 times the investment funds, and that is, what is anticipated. We can't confirm, guarantee the investment.
Right.
It is just that. You run the risk of losing your funds, so you want to make sure that you're aware of that. But I believe that this is a great way to put yourself out there. Essentially, if you're interested,
great.
You don't have to. Well, I think it's great because you don't have to do anything but make a phone call to us, and we take it from there. And the folks
wow.
have been super, super excited about this. I think it's going to be nice.
That's great.
So
I
what
think
do you
it
think
is
about
too.
That?
What a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it's a great opportunity
yeah.
for, like you said, someone that doesn't have, you know, the contacts to know I'll do all the graphics and just everything that goes into it. But right here, we're a one-stop shop, and it's
mm-hmm.
taken care of. You just have to make that investment,
good.
And, you know.
Yeah.
It will happen.
I think that is the way to go.
I know that.
Do what you need to do.
I totally agree.
I think this is great. Thank you. What we're basically doing is creating wealth opportunities for folks. So
right. This
is where you come in and, you know, and we do the work. We're thrilled to do the work and do some great rolling
exactly.
out all of that.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Everything is
so,
right here.
Yes. Well, I've got to just go back a little bit and do a little rewind. If you guys are just joining us out there, yes, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. Gary Hines is midweek. Mid-show, mid-everything. It's Wednesday, August 2nd, 2023. And, yes, we're having a big birthday celebration. My actual birthday is on Saturday, August 12th.
On the 12th,
but I'll be out of
yes.
town that day, yeah. So we're going to celebrate on this broadcast on Friday the 11th at 8 a.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, folks. And we want everybody there. We've already got special guests lined up. Got to see if we can get some special performances, some great new music, and just put
awesome.
K one down. Yes, it'll be my 29th birthday, we'll say.
And, 29 and holding?
Yeah, something like that. Add a few more years.
I always tell my kids I'm 21 and holding.
Oh, yeah,
every year,
like
I'm
that.
21.
Well, I'm holding right there, too. That's about the age. That's as far as we're going. But that we're going to admit to anyway. So, yes, we're going to have a blast. We absolutely are going to have a blast.
Yes.
Now, come up.
Definitely
in just a few
celebrate.
Minutes. Michael. Yes, I can't wait to celebrate. And we're going to talk to him about it as well. Michael Hopkins, the host of ZTR, Vet Talk Radio Show. We're going to talk to him about yesterday, his big show.
Right.
As he's still pretty much closing out the second season, about to go into a third season. We'll talk to him about that. But we want to find out the feedback on his special broadcast. It was
right,
really
from
fun
the broadcast.
To believe that, that veterans don't or should not do. So he'll clarify all of that and tell us
awesome.
About the feedback. So we're really excited. That's coming up at about 7:30 this morning. And Eastern, 6:30 Central, Michael Hopkins, host of ETR. And so... yeah, I'm excited. I'm also excited. We'll be focusing on rolling out new Carapy products. We have
yes.
not forgotten you, Carapy customers. We got items to ship out right now that will be coming out
awesome.
This weekend.
I'm
at
so
the
excited.
I got, yes, we're getting it together finally. And it's just a lot to do, but we are doing it. And
gonna
we are going to keep doing it until we
exactly.
get it done. So, yeah, I like
always
that.
Moving forward.
No, well, that's the key. It's about moving forward. It is about changing lanes sometimes, you know.
Right.
Sometimes you have to change it up. Sometimes you got to change it up. But the thing is to keep going forward, to
right.
keep pushing.
Right.
And for me, I'm up. I've got my things to work on and we're just trying to just hang in there for everybody. And
that's
I'm real happy about that. Yeah. But, yeah, I think we'll do our big event. We're looking at a live show, and this is probably where you guys can let us know what you think also.
We're looking at coming back to New York City. I'm leaning towards doing another hair radio show live on stage in January of 2024.
Okay.
I'm leaning towards that. It's a Monday evening, so Mondays are tough to kind of push out there, except for the hair industry. So we want to kind of make sure that let folks know now so that they can start to reserve the time and make arrangements to be off and come into town. But it would be nice just to do something to be, doesn't have to be fancy and big. It can just be intimate.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just touch base and get everybody together.
Right.
And
come on
it'll
together.
Be, yeah, I think, yeah, I think that would be nice to do. It'll be, the only difference is it'll be, you know, January is typically cold. But
right.
you never know now. You never know. It might be 80 degrees you come here.
The seasons are so intertwined
right.
now. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. It really is. So we've got to figure that out. But I'm thinking that it's something that, you know, I want to. We'll figure it out and we'll come back together. And hopefully this upcoming week or so we'll have some definitive announcements for you on that.
Great.
But I am looking forward to it. Again, I think we can do the very least is the hair radio show returns to the stage, number two. And
awesome.
I think it'll be nice. Yeah, so we bring together. This time we're going to have great performances like we did, but we're also going to have it in a much bigger, much better format, so to speak. Well, it's beautiful, but we're
okay.
going to change a few little things around and just to make it a little better, do a little reception out there and then, you know, load everybody on in and just make it a little different this go round. But I'm excited. At least we'll be back.
How am I?
Yeah.
Back together.
It's
awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be great. We just got to get it all together, but I think we're on the right track.
Sounds
so
good.
All that's going on. We might even make it into an Afrolock launch party type thing or celebrating the magazines.
Right.
You know, so we've got so many things that we can celebrate there. And I'm
right.
really excited about it. So, okay, well, listen, why don't we have got to chime on in with our hope of the day. We've got to talk about hope
yeah.
of the day. And
oh, yeah.
I love what we do because it inspires so many folks.
It does.
So, Nicole, what exactly is Hope of the Day all about? And I can't wait to hear what you've got lined up for us today. Take it away.
All right. Thank you, Carrie. Well, each day I share an inspirational way from the book called High Hopes by Patrick Lindsay. And I just share to lift your spirits, to start the day in a positive way. Hope is the belief that our future can be better than our past. So for each and every one of us, it gives our lives meaning. No matter what it is that we go through on a day-to-day basis, there's always that hope, that positive expectation that change can and will occur in our lives. So I want to share Hope of the Day for all of the fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show. And the hope of the day is one thing at a time. Multitasking is greatly overrated. It can dissipate your efforts and cut your concentration span. Do it when you must, but when you can, focus all your energies on the task at hand. So what do you think about that hope of the day for today, Carrie? One thing at a time. Carrie? Carrie, did I lose you?
Yes. You know what? What is so funny is that
Nakomri, I'm here. You know what is so funny? My mic wasn't on because I took whenever we do Hope of the Day, I take myself out usually, and I'm just sitting here talking and no one's listening or responding. It happens, folks. It's early in the morning. What can we say? Nicole Marie, we're joined by Michael Hopkins, and I love the Hope of the Day, and I'm a pretty good multitasker. But yes, I love it.
Oh my.
Love, love, love. Yes, and I'm just talking up a storm. What about you? What are your thoughts on that and doing one thing at a time? Nicole Marie, do you think?
One thing at a time, I definitely agree on, you know, depending on what it is, what you're doing. But for me, as a mom, I'm always multitasking because I have so many things to do. Now, when it comes to working on something, you know, whether it's something personal I'm doing, something I'm doing for work, then I will focus on one thing. But on a daily basis, I'm more so multitasking just because there's so much to get done, especially when I'm here at home, that I am multitasking. So it will be kind of hard for me to just focus on just one thing at a time.
One thing.
Because, right.
Yeah,
but I do see the positive in that.
Yes, let's check in with Hopkins. Michael Hopkins, GTR host, you've been listening. What are your thoughts
on
this?
Michael.
What are your thoughts on the hope of the day?
Oh, yes, the hope of the day. And that multitasking, yes, sometimes concentrate, at least that's what I've learned to do, especially in the claims realm that I work in as an accredited claims agent. I learned to one thing at a time when I'm dealing with my clients. And I do everything I can to just concentrate on that one issue that they have and not try to do multiple issues that they have. I find that it's a whole lot better just to take it one thing at a time, because a lot of times it depends on who you're dealing with as far as a client. And sometimes I have some of my veterans that this is the best thing to do for them. Let's just do one thing at a time.
Okay.
Let's get good at that part, and then we'll get good at this part. But I always love... You know, I always love the things that Nicole Marie does with the hope of the day. I always love it because it inspires
me. I want to kind of touch on that just a little bit because that's important. I think women tend to be known as better multitaskers than guys, I believe. And I think there's some truth in that. but I also have to say being able to focus on many different things at one time, or just focusing on one thing at one time or whatever. Either way could be successful for you. So I think it just depends on your routine and what you're good at doing. So I think this is fantastic. Good to have you guys. Okay, well, listen, why don't we take a little bit of a music break? And when we come back, Michael, we got to weigh in on some of this vet talk. I want to catch up a little bit on that. We've got some surprise things on the way this morning. We're just getting started. You listened to Tony Perry early this morning, and so much more on the way. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Michael Hopkins, more with vet talk coming up. So, Michael, get ready. We're on our way. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Here is... a little bit of upbeat music, getting ready for our party next week. Stay with us.
Well, I think with all of the conversations that I've had probably in the last year, Carrie, and of course, you know, we've had our industry, hair, beauty, and skin, and, you know, ethnic beauty has taken a hard hit. So I think one of the most important projects to me is to tell my story of just how I grew up in black hair care at the beginning of the boom as the billion-dollar economic industrial revolution of what we call the curl, even though we were coming out of pressing curls and going into the afro. So that's one of the things I'm working on is a documentary of my life and how I grew up in black hair care. And some of people, it's funny, you know, because people would always say, you know, we had all this wealth and black dynasties and of generating black wealth, but where did the kids go? You know, where did the money go? Where did that whole wealth gap? Where is it? And so I felt, you know, a sense of responsibility to at least tell it from my perspective. So that it's almost like that all that wealth kind of like evaporated.
And so, well, that's what I'm going to ask you. Yeah, where did the money go? Where? That's the question, the million-dollar question here, literally.
Yeah.
We're talking about generations of hair industry superstar folks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, you know, so
it's a complex conversation because you can't talk about where the wealth went until you talk about there's a conversation that I do address called gerontocracy. And gerontocracy is when the passing doesn't happen. And your predecessors stay too long. And they stay too long because they're not adapting. And we always talk about how companies should adapt to you adapt inside before you see signs of the changing of the trends or changing of the times. And so there's a thing that and when you get into the 70s and 80s, most of those companies were ran by men, black men. And so black men tend to look at their children differently.
Watch the show, Marl. No, geez.
Black women. You know, no, they do. And it's, let's just say, you know, you have your John Johnson. You have your George Johnson. You have your Mr. Dudleys. You have your Mr. Marls. You have your Mr. Bronners. You have the World of Curls and the Donnies and the Leisure Curls. You had these men. And so they did have children. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the limelight is addictive. The limelight is addictive. And they just don't see the continuity of their legacies through their children. It sounds like a good thing. They know they should do it, but they don't do it. You know, and so there's a cultural thing. And then when you have the Eunice Johnsons and the Celia DeVore, and you have Dr. Katie Wickhams, and you have this when you have women. They tend to let go a little easier. So those legacies can continue. But there is just like a real cultural thing. And then I get into the documentary because it's real talk. Mm. You know, this is not just us wanting to pass wealth. It's not us wanting to just close wealth gaps. You can't close wealth gaps if you don't have the continuity of the predecessor into the succession plan, which is your children.
I agree.
You can't close a gap because the gap keeps getting wider because white America keeps passing it on and locking it within their culture. We don't. It's a cultural thing.
We don't
get
really
into that.
Yeah,
we don't get it.
Well, let me ask you about that a little bit, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that because, you know, I mean, on a simplistic term, very simple way. I talk to a lot of hairstylists, you know, throughout the years, and I always ask them,
about, you know, they open up the shops, and I, very basic, I say, well, what about your kids, you know, or they helping you or working at the shops and, you know, and this and that. And they cannot get those kids to help them at the shops. The kids generally take it for granted. You know, they've got all the money that comes from, the, you know, the parents' hard work at these salons and barbershops. And they just go on and living a very, you know, great life from the benefits of the financial aspect. But they do nothing to support the parents' hard work. And they truly are not going to be heading up any kind of, you know, taking on a business. That's just not even on the table. And I always wondered about that, and I kind of think about it for my own company. So this is something that is very, very important, and it's a big disparity between the African-American community with regards to succession, I call it, and the and the people who are outside of our community. So this is really something that is very interesting to me, and I know you're on a different level with it, but it just, I don't understand. Is it just just something that the kids don't, you know, should we expect them to want to, you know, pass, you know, to continue on in their, with their parents' legacy? You know, well, is this something?
But think about it, Gary. I didn't want to be a barber. My father started out as a barber.
Right.
The key here is that Mr. Marl created a company. Now, think about it. Most hair, you know, because I'm a hairstylist, I get it.
Yes.
The problem is that their hairstyling portion of their business is not a company. So there is no room to do other things besides maybe promotions or marketing of the, the parents' actual skill sets, which is doing hair. Where else is there other means of doing something else if the child or if the offspring is not doesn't want to do hair? And just think of this analogy, and I always tell them when I get this question, you know, do I, would I really want to inherit a cotton picking business? You know, black people pick cotton, and you know, would I want to pass that on? You know, so the physical portions of, you know, businesses are not companies. Business is one thing, and a company is another. So in a company is encased, which I always tell people, I'm an intrapreneur. I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't need to make anything. I don't need to discover anything. I don't need to do any of that. What I need to do is to come in with something already formed and take it to the next level. So because my father
an innovator.
Had a company, right, he had a company which had, you know, roots, and then it springed out with branches and leaves. So there was so many branches to him because they and just take the Johnson daughter, you know, with Ebony and Jet. Because Ebony and Jet and was really actually a beauty business. They were Duke and Ravine, just relaxer, and Duke was a men's line. There were so many other things to do within Johnson Publishing. So it was an actual company.
Right.
So that tends to allow the successor to kind of fit in and take the reins. But if you are just a business, which hair salons are, barber, you and it's tied to the parents' physical skills, and you really have a very difficult time with that, with the succession plan.
Well, now you are talking about in this – yes, in your upcoming documentary, we're talking about some of the biggest names in the hair industry. And so I'm just – one of the things that jumps out at me, have you heard any feedback from some of those, you know, some of those families, some of those super well-known hair industry superstar families? Have you gotten any feedback
yet? Evaporated.
What are their thoughts?
Well, the problem. Wow. Well, too, when you are acquired by big companies like Procter & Gamble or L'Oreal, and you evaporate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you. There is nothing to unless you stay on as a consultant or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But no,
and that doesn't
you evaporate.
Usually last too long. Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's tomorrow? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. Yeah. Just amazing. I'm looking forward to this documentary.
I was in the studio doing San Diego Monitor News business as a publisher because we now had it at a podcast studio, right? And in the middle of that, I get a phone call from Chicago or someplace, and they want, you know, 1,000, you know, Willie Morrow blow-dry novels. It's just that, you know, here I go, I'm in the newspaper, but I get calls about something that was created over 45 years ago, and it's still the number one heat tool on Amazon. That is Succession.
Let's tell everybody,
something in beauty. It's an amazing thing.
Exactly.
That's a company,
and I want to remind. Yes. I absolutely want to remind everybody about the amazing legacy and lineage that you have. So we're talking about the Morrow family dynasty. So I'm in the hair business, and your father, as you just mentioned, that starting with the novel. Tell us a little bit about his invention, because that hit the mark out there and made him pretty much a household name in the hair industry, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, just combs, period. I think that in those 60s, 1964, bringing to commercial market is the brilliance of Mr. Morrow. Not the fact that he's creating or duplicating something that had already been done in the continent of Africa. So the comb in and of itself is not the invention. The invention is to be able to put it in industrial commerce to make it available, because if you didn't go to the continent of Africa in 1963, 1964, you wouldn't get it.
You wouldn't get it, right?
Yes.
Correct.
So the ability for him to take it, to redesign it, patent it, take it to the U.S. Congress, put it into commerce, and to commercialize it, monetize it, right, and productize it, and make it available for black people in the West Indies, black people in North America, black people in in Europe, and black people in Asia, black people in Africa too. They didn't know it was a thing, you know. So we could fashion and style our hair and be a part of the secular world. So the Afrocomb was put in the secular world by Mr. Morrow by redesigning it and industrializing it. It's the same process as taking tobacco. Yeah, tobacco is natural in its environment, but to make it be consumed and then enrich yourself by that great legacy called an Afrocomb, and then making other people have it in Cuba and in Hawaii and in other places. So that was the brilliance. And then to create this generation, and then you have the first one, and then the next generation of them, and then to have utility patents, and then go into, you know, making a comb and a blow dry so we can have blowouts and straighten hair and things of that nature. That was, I think, the difference between a Mr. Morrow, a Joe Dudley, a Gardner, a Fulshing, a different angle to being part of the legacy of ethnic beauty.
Absolutely. And I just want to also bring attention to that documentary, because to me, 400 years without a comb was so far ahead. Now, documentaries are a lot more, out there. Maybe it has a lot to do with the pandemic that we have come through. But I do want to say that the documentary, documentary really started a lot of the hair industry documentaries, if you will, to me. I think it's one of the most well-known and most seen hair industry documentary in the world. So, and we're talking about 400 years without a comb, and it's still out there, and I'm just loving that. So, again, we're talking about hair legacies and loving it.
It started out as a book. And I think that is probably one of the reasons why it's the hair care, historical Bible that everyone goes to, you know, because it's a three-generation book. In all three decades,
wow.
Mr. Morrow rewrote it. And then in the last, the fourth quarter of its generation and its edition, he created, and Mr. Morrow just really deals with the culture inside of the plantation, and it starts there. Because the commercial
wow.
market that you and I enjoy was started on the plantation. It formed itself into, and because of that complete disconnection for about three centuries, that disconnection from the world's first organized beauty kind of, you know, that activity, the way we did it, you know, it was not quite done. When Europe went to colonialize Africa, that is where they learned hygiene. The roots of beauty is hygienic, not, you know, fashion and styling and things of that nature. But it was basically really had its roots in hygiene. And I think that starting there, only a black person could have done that, Perry. You know, no one cared about
absolutely.
Obviously. How you fashioned
absolutely.
Yourself and cleaned yourself and how you, you know, became this really sophisticated society and culture and how you, you know, you did things, you know, with your body and your health and well-being. No one was interested in that type of story. So, yeah, once again, Mr. Morrow hit it on the head, you know.
And it didn't stop there. The San Diego Monitor News. I want to talk about that. Can you tell us a little bit, for those who are outside of the California experience, if you will, what exactly is that? And I believe that you go everywhere with it. So tell everybody about it.
We turned from New York. I lived in New York for 19 years. And,
yes.
You know, one of the things that, and this is me, you know, I'm going to tell this story in the documentary. One of the reasons why Mr. Morrow got into publishing is not really because he had a great love for journalism, but black people don't really understand that it's legacy to get a newspaper. All hair care men, all hair care families, it was almost like a rite of passage. You had to get a publication. You know, most people think that John Johnson got the publication and then got into the hair business. No, Johnson was already in beauty. So their mentor, S.B. Fuller, always told them and taught Joe Dudley, George Johnson, which is Ultra Sheen, Johnson Product, and then John Johnson, which was Johnson Publishing. When you start your beauty line, you get you a newspaper. So Mr. Morrow was just following the great recipe and the great formula of success of S.B. Fuller, one of his mentors. So
yes,
all of them got newspapers. So Mr. Morrow got created one in San Diego in 1986 because of the mentor Bill Thompson in creating. S.B. Fuller always taught them that you create your own advertising tool. So if you get on the cover of somebody else's publication, that was fine. But make sure that you are always, you create a product, you got to have a way to advertise it. So create a magazine in and of itself, put some content. And you see how forward they were, actually? And
oh,
you
yeah.
think about
oh,
how,
yeah.
the,
and,
how
and
powerful
that,
content
yeah.
is today. Yeah.
But oh, absolutely. They were way ahead.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was to be the power of the advertisement. You know, be ahead. Put yourself on your own cover. Put yourself, you know, look bigger than, you know, you actually are. You know, put your own content out there, your own stories, and then put yourself on the, you know, on the cover, and then put your own ads in. Yeah, so it was always about advertising the actual
yeah.
root business. That's how Mr. Mom
exactly.
got into it. And then, of course, and it just rolled into a journalistic product, you know, local business, local people, and things of that nature. And then
which I love,
it's been adjudicated for over almost, you know, we're heading into 40 years, you know. And so I have just taken over. And, of course, in 2010, I turned it digital. I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I was the first black paper in the state of California to be adjudicated and digitized at the same time. So it was I made sure that I created a hybrid. And it was probably because of my technical skills, you know, graphic skills and technical skills and all that stuff I learned while I was in New York, that I could make that turn and that very, very quickly. So,
well, I love
we
the stories
are,
that you guys cover. Yeah, yeah. We've got to tell folks, how can they get their hands or see? Oh, absolutely. I love when you guys put things out on the internet and, you know, and I see and you do such good work. I love the pictures and the graphics and everything. You're not telling the same stories that everybody else is telling. And that's...
No,
I
refuse to.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that our people need orientation and information. You know, because, you know, at the end of the day, we have a saying, if you're not informed, news doesn't matter. You know, if you don't know anything.
Whoa.
You don't know anything.
I have
not
to write
informed.
That one down. If you're not informed, the news doesn't matter. Wow, that says it all. Wow, okay. You know, let me bring everybody on up to speed with this. If you're kind of just joining us, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the All Know Here Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, my very special guest today. She really returns back to us. It's been quite a while. She comes back to the Here Radio Morning Show. You guys know her. She was out here with us on the East Coast, but she's returned to California, the San Diego area, as we were just talking about, the SDMN, San Diego Monitor newspaper, which we just love, this San Diego Monitor News, I should say. So, Cheryl, how can they get this online? Do you have a place that you can send everybody to find out more, to register?
Yeah, it's a mobile site, so you can get it on your mobile device, and you can go to the website, sdmonitornews.com. Yeah, our story content is very off the beat. I am very picky what our readers are exposed to. They're always are going to get a very avant-garde, a very different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I believe that's one of our impediments. We are so 1960s directed. We are so infused in the 1960s that to get, you know, especially African Americans the 60s and 70s, it's very hard to get us back into the present moment of who we are.
Exactly.
And I tell them all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you think about it, African Americans, all 46 million, the average age of an African American in this country is 26 years old.
Isn't that?
And then
dealing
with the African diaspora, they're 19. So if you think about 26 and 19, then, you know, that's a lot of time that, you know, we've got to look at things differently. We got to look
we
at
absolutely
things very,
do.
Very millennial. Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
and I
yeah.
think that could be one of our strengths, thinking
absolutely.
About things in such a different way to get something. I have also another saying, you know, we want something we've never had. We've got to do something we've never done. We've got to think ways
exactly.
that we've never thought. And
exactly. Well, let me turn to probably I'm going to call it the elephant in the room, and that is the pandemic.
Okay.
Yes, and I know that's a topic and a half. That's a, you know, we'll probably have to add on 2 or 3 hours to cover this one. But what is your take when you look back? Because right now, as we go to the air with this particular broadcast today, we are more than what they're saying in terms of emerging and all of that. And what can you say looking back? What was the experience like in California and the hair biz part where you were? And California, to me, California is a very different, had a very different approach with all of that. But what's your take? You are living there.
Yeah.
What's
well,
your
let me
take
say this.
Because of the weather.
Because of the weather, I think we made an adjustment very quickly because we could go outside very quickly. We were always outside, you know. And so I think that they adjusted well. I think African Americans did not adjust well because, of course, you know. And to me, and let me just say this: the elephant in the room is not really quite the pandemic, from my perspective. The elephant in the room is that the fact that black people are prone to be frightened, much more traumatized than our other racial counterparts. So we don't adjust well. We have the boogeyman. You know, everything's the boogeyman for us. And our people secretly in our silos were saying, oh, stay in. You know, and that is not quite good for business. And so if you are naturally afraid, you don't pivot. You're very slow to react. And you can imagine, Carrie, I was very avant-garde and had a different take on it. You know, because after, I would probably say March of 2020, it was not a pandemic at that point. It was an epidemic in the United States. An epidemic in Brazil. It wasn't a pandemic at that point. Other world governments had contained it. And so that's what we keep saying. Like the rest of the world had our issues. No, the rest of the world, the continent of Africa, barely is reaching 4,000 deaths. The whole 54 countries.
The whole continent,
That's enormous if you think about it. And there's something quite not right with that. You know, within 50 to 100 to 200 miles, you know, from where we quote unquote say it began, I mean, they have less than maybe 300. And so it wasn't a pandemic long. It was an epidemic. And I think that because our news outlets, and speaking of the San Diego Monitor News, I just refuse to kind of put fuel on the fire I didn't take any COVID money. I refuse to because I can't say no, because you can't really stay.
Well, they were throwing it out there.
Yeah, they were.
they were throwing it out.
Let me just say this, and I refuse to kind of have. And I think I did it once, and you know, Carrie, I just couldn't do it because one of the things, because it doesn't allow you to look at things objectively. And if we're going to have
black news, and
if we're going to be very neutral, you can't be involved in that kind of thing. And let me just say this: as our mother company, which is Beauty, I can afford to do that, and I understand that most papers needed that money to, you know, so hey. Right. And because I was digitized prior to 10 years ago, I pivoted very quickly to digital and still maintained my other advertisers. So, you know, 2020 was not did not affect me. Not economically.
That is amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because
and
the
so,
the census was going on at the same time. So that was very supportive.
Yeah, that's true.
And
which changed the game here in New York for us to a degree. I have to say, though, and looking out, so what are some of the, you know, when you look at the beauty industry, you know, how, in your opinion, has it affected the folks in the beauty industry? I mean, especially, like you said, in California, though, see, you guys were, remind me of Georgia. Right after this pandemic was kind of declared, right, Georgia was like, okay, we're like literally about 2 weeks later. this again, everybody. I mean, literally.
Yeah.
I remember having panel discussions on our broadcast here on the Hair Radio Morning Show in the year 2020. It was just strange, a very strange dynamic in different states.
Yes.
And so the industry was very different, and then and we've had the people from Barbicide and all these other folks on, and they scared the bejesus out of us with the discourse on television news, as you were kind of saying. It's almost surreal. So, so when you look at the beauty industry, will we make it? What do you think?
Well, you know, I don't even think it's that the salon. I think that we could have pivoted. That I also was involved in some technology and formulation and dealing with a disinfectant that covers you from all viruses 9.993.
Really?
And it protects you for 90 days. You don't even have to sanitize. Once you sanitize your
hands,
you know, you're protected. Yes. We have it in production. It has all of its OSHA and FDA passage. So I answered it in a very technological way. But here's the thing, Carrie. It's not about what's going on in the salon, per se, because black hair care professionalism is wired through the salon. But the industry is wired through the trade show. Once you took the trade show and you could not meet in the grove of 7,000 to 10,000 people, you decimated the ethnic hair care industry, because the ethnic hair care industry is wired through the trade show. So now the expo, and now the festival, and now the trade shows, you can't meet. So how do you carry along something that is wired through the actual platforming, hair set, and trade show, and all these big, huge halls and auditoriums?
Exactly.
And conventions. When you can't meet.
And I'm raising my hand right now.
Right. You're devastated. Yeah. And so that means that ethnic hair care, because the Garner Brother, as you know it, is over. The international show in New York is over. You can't meet.
Wow.
Those are too many people in one confined space, and now, you know, you're trying to stay 6 feet apart, you know, and you got to, you know, that is a nightmare.
It was a show killer for sure. Yeah.
And so the problem is
gotta say
that,
to you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, please finish your thought. The problem is.
No. The question and the challenge for black hair care and ethnic beauty is we needed to pivot long before this. And I have been telling show promoters for at least 5 years, pivot to the small conference and the more con kind of business model, and create a different kind of gathering to where it's an invited list. And it happens more often instead of twice a year.
Exactly.
And so,
I speak to 1,000%. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they act like I didn't, you know, say anything. So, you know, invite the formulators. You know what I mean? Invite, create a TED Talk style. Or there's so many other ways to bring smaller groups. Yeah.
Exactly, and to create those lanes that will support you and take you through these times. Now, Cheryl, I've got to say, there is one big story that we are revisiting here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. And this, not too long ago, but there was a huge story. Now, I'm telling you, it was the number one cover story, especially in the hair and beauty industry, but it had crossed over into mass media. And this was the story of the Gorilla Glue girl who had put the glue in her hair, the Gorilla Glue. And she was rescued, so to speak, by a California doctor, Dr. Michael Obeng, who was a guest on our very show, on the Hair Radio Morning Show. He spoke to Hair Radio first about this this ordeal for this young woman and how he was able to remedy the situation. But let's start with your take on this, because we're talking about this again as we'll be checking in to see what's new and what's the latest that's going on. It's been a few months. Has her hair grown back? What happened? What's going on? So we will revisit it. But what's your take on this situation? I wish I could have seen your face when you heard this on the news.
You know,
I wish I could have just been a fly on the wall.
Yeah, you know it. I'm always going to be honored with you, Terry.
Yeah.
Wow. And let me just say this, and I am in no way invalidating anybody. And the doctor thing was to me was, you know, a little far out there. You know, it's so funny because the glue. And here we go again, and this is me sticking up for my beauty and beauty professionals, because I am a hairstylist. For that particular act connected with a doctor, to me, you know, because at the end of the day, the glue in and of itself is not a medication. That's number one. Number two, it's not. It's in the store where a common person can purchase it. And for not a beauty professional to not be able to help her, and I won't even say be able to help her, right? Because what the medical professional used to unstick the stickiness of the solution, anybody could have done that. Because what he used to do that. Now, will you save the hair from the high content of what the effects because of that particular chemical that in that glue did it, you know, because we have to ask what was on the hair first. Was it relaxed?
Exactly.
Was it natural? You know, at the end of the day. So, and to me, because it probably was not really on her scalp, that the scalp hair is probably the hair that is going to obviously be the healthiest. I already know in terms of, you know, of course, we don't necessarily talk about it all the time, but I'm the only cosmetic trichologist in the world that deals with cosmetology-based hair loss on afro textures. But you know, eventually that hair is going to be cut away from her body. Yeah. It's not going to be. It's not going to be. So,
Cheryl,
I don't know. I don't know how much help he was. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, he,
I'm a little in the middle. Yeah, I'm a little in the middle with the doctor angle, you know, because eventually.
Well, you've got to be back on the show when he's here. So, because I would love for you to break it all down with Dr. Oving, who just seems like a nice gentleman and all. But, you know, there's a whole lot more to this story. There is. There's a great deal of this story. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
And
I'm
just grateful that we were in the middle of it somewhere. I'm just grateful that we were there.
At the end of the day, you have to cover it. You know, if nothing is black, black news and ethnic beauty news, that story was a prime example of it. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, I am honored. Again, we've been chatting with the amazing Cheryl Morrow. Hair royalty, you've been declared and named that for decades. We've been calling you that, hair royalty, right here on our broadcast today. I appreciate your take on it. I've always wanted to you know, when I hear some of these big stories and some of these big things, I always say, what in the world would Cheryl Morrow say? Really, what would you say about it? Because you always have an interesting
The moment I saw that, you know, because you know the moment I saw it, I was like, oh, God, here we go again. Why did she just end up at a salon? How did we get to the doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, like, really weird, you know. But anyway,
Yes. Well, it's about education, and that's where you come in, education. And what was that line earlier? If you're not informed, then the news don't matter.
Well, if you're not informed, news doesn't matter. Yeah, you can't gossip with anybody
yes.
who's not really informed about what they're gossiping about. You know, you can't gossip
I love
with
it.
Them, you know?
I love it.
That's it.
I totally
yeah.
agree. Well, Cheryl Morrow, now what's next for you? What's next for you?
I think that I am going to probably be peeling away from the publisher kind of role at San Diego Monarchy News. The George Floyd thing kind of took me out. I think I wanted to be at the helm during that incident and in the one-year anniversary and, you know, all of these things.
Well, were you one of those
coming
who
up.
Were... Were you against the use of the word anniversary? I didn't understand that because anniversary means, you know, just that. It doesn't indicate or mean that it was, you know, party on a table per se. But I saw a lot of stuff online that said, oh, don't call it an anniversary. No media company call it an anniversary. It's not a celebration. So I said, well, I understand what I think what the person meant or their sentiment, but I don't think that – I don't see what the harm of the word itself, anniversary. How do you weigh in, being a media company, Ms. Publisher of the San Diego Monitor News?
Oh,
how
boy.
Do you weigh in on that?
The wonderful thing that I got a call one day, and it was the first cousin of Mr. Floyd.
Hmm.
Their mother are sisters, and he is stationed here in San Diego. And he grew up with him. And
wow.
After, you know, experiencing that whole thing, you know, it really, you know, that is tomato, tomato, you know, anniversary, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
know what, it, you know, it,
yeah.
it, what happened.
We
and,
know what it really means. Exactly.
You know, well, we get caught up in things of that nature. And I think that once we deal with our trauma, about it, then we can clearly talk about preventing it. And that is very hard to get. And that's why I don't join a lot of black news outlets. I'm just,
the chatter,
you know, we're just different.
Stuff,
yeah, we're just different
yeah.
because at the end of the day, on this end of the world, we have a wonderful civil rights activist and founder of the People Alliance for Justice Advocates. His name is Reverend Shane Harris. You know, he's approaching it in terms of preventing and plucking out the next Derek Chauvin. It's not, you know, George is one focus that people can focus on, but at the end of the day, we're not plucking out. I mean, he had 7 to 8 excessive forces on his record already, 19 years. Why didn't we understand that this guy was a problem? You know, so
exactly.
let's just focus
exactly.
on, so on our side of the world, we're choosing to think tank and focus on better policy in that regard from the incident. In my experience with Mr. Gary Jones, which is a cousin, he's in the military as well, you know, San Diego, that is renowned for that. I think that, you know, it's you know, we can ring the bell. But, you know, you listen to the recording, you know, it's
wow.
he's going to jail for fraud, which means that they were executioner, judge, and jury.
Just
arriving on the scene. So we want to prevent
right.
that because there's something that happens before excessive force. And there is a disregard of the Constitution. And that is the problem. This is a problem when they approach you that you are outside of the rules. And why is, you know, I tell Black Lives Matter and the whole people, Black lives don't matter, won't matter until Black life matters. And so that is what happened before the incident.
Yeah.
And once that happens, that will then.
Michael Hopkins, it's time for the Vet Talk Radio Show, and I am so excited. I know you've been working on something very, very special for the amazing veteran fans today. Michael Hopkins, take it away. What do you have?
Yes, Carrie Hines, I have four left.
Michael Hopkins, it's time for the Vet Talk Radio Show, and I am so excited. I know you've been working on something very, very special for the amazing veteran fans today. Michael Hopkins, take it away. What do you have?
Yes, Carrie Hines, I have four lesser ways to get a 100% rating with lower back pain. That's what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay, that sounds incredible. And that's something that just about everybody can relate to. Who in the world can't relate
pretty
to that pain?
Much.
So I can't wait for you to get
pretty
into
much,
that.
Carrie.
Yes, and we start each of these Vet Talk radio episodes with our incredible salute to the amazing veterans of this show and the fans that you have. Thank you so much. We appreciate you and all the efforts that you are making and strides. And we hope that this program brings you a great deal of knowledge and joy today. Okay, Michael Hopkins, I'm ready to get started. So you said four lesser ways to get to 100%, and this is all about the back pain, the lower back pain, I want to say. So let's go ahead and jump on in. So what's at number four today?
Carrie, at number four is one rating we don't really talk about a lot, but it can happen. Did you know that when you're going for your ratings for lower back pain, the VA claim section can actually give you a 100% scheduler rating? They can flat out give you a 100% scheduler rating.
What exactly is a 100% scheduler rating? It sounds good, but what is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of bad, Carrie. It actually means that your back is just that bad. That you have, no kind of bending of your back, and you can just barely do anything with your entire back. Not only your lower back, but
it's
your entire back.
You're in bad shape. Wow.
Yeah, you're in really bad shape. And it's very rare that you'll see that. There are veterans out here that have that issue with their back, but it's very rare. But if you have, as a veteran, Carrie, if you have the correct medical evidence, and as you know, Carrie, when you file for claims, and we always talk about this, medical evidence. If you have the right medical evidence and you have your statements in support of claim, you also have an independent medical opinion from an independent doctor that you have that clearly shows through x-rays, through testimonies, through whatever it is it takes, that they clearly show your back is just that bad, you can get this 100% scheduler rating. But as I said, it's a very rare occurrence. It's not like an everyday thing.
Yes, like if you get that, you really must need it.
you really do. And as you know, Carrie, there will be some other things that will come along with if your back is just that bad. There's some special monthly compensation. You need caregiver. You need all kinds of things.
You need a whole lot.
Yeah, you need a whole lot of medical attention.
That one wishes, bad back is just excruciating and can be unrelenting pain. So
very much so.
Wow. Yeah. So this is one of the lesser known ways to get to 100%. And a way that you probably don't want to get there.
this one you don't want. And our hearts and prayers go out to the veterans that have this.
Yes,
because, as you said, it's excruciating pain. I mean, I know personally I have lower back pain that I'm rated for. And it's a daily thing that you go through with lower back pain. I mean, it's just a daily.
It can be really very painful. Well, we just wish, like Michael said, to all of you veterans, men and women out there who are just doing it up. We appreciate you. So, yes, Michael.
Very much,
okay. Well, that's an eye-opening way to get started on these lesser known ways, all about the lower back ratings. So today, what's at number three, Michael Hopkins?
Now, Terry, number three, this is something that we've talked about on the show all the time. We've talked about this, and it's secondary ratings. A lot of times veterans overlook secondary ratings that are based upon their lower back that can help them get to 100%. There are a lot of just little known things that are associated with your lower back that it'll take you to 100%.
Well, give us some examples of these.
Now, one of the examples, and I've seen this plenty of times, Carrie, where a lot of veterans have overlooked this. Even some of the people, when they go to the CNP or claims and pension exams,
right,
some of the nurse practitioners and doctors overlook this thing. It's called radiculopathy, nerve damage.
Hold on, what?
It's called radiculopathy, or better known as nerve damage.
Much easier to say that one. Okay.
Much easier to say nerve damage. And a lot of times, believe it or not, Carrie, if you have a lower back issue, you have a nerve issue. Your nerves are being pinched. A lot of times, a lot of veterans have herniated discs. They have arthritis. They got combinations. They have all these things going on with their lower back. So when they go to a claims and pension examination, the examiner may get it right for the lower back part. They may say, hey, this is service-connected, your lower back. We're going to base it upon, boom, this is what we'll base it upon. We'll base it upon, good example is you have a hip problem. And your hip problem is causing you to walk with an altered gait. In other words, you're walking with a limp. That limp, in turn, all of a sudden causes your back to be misaligned.
Wow.
But unfortunately, in the process of that, Carrie, there's bony spurs. There's all kinds of things that are going on with your nerves. And boom, all of a sudden, a lot of veterans will experience there's numbness, there's tingling. If it gets to extreme cases, they may have what they call a drop foot, where your foot just goes numb and you're dragging your foot. You've seen some people walking and you can actually hear their feet scraping the ground.
Oh my! That's
and they have all of these things. Yeah, I mean the nerve damages. You know, you can even connect, believe with your lower back, you could even connect mental health with your lower back issue as a secondary.
Now, explain that a little bit, Michael, because when I think about this, this is not something that I would immediately think that mental health can play a part with as a secondary with something like this, with nerve damage or the lower back, we should say. So talk a little bit about how is that even possible?
Well, Carrie, with your lower back, if you're in excruciating pain with your lower back, that's the key word right there. You have chronic pain. You don't have just regular pain, you know.
Once in a while.
You have once in a while, you don't have acute pain in your lower back. You have chronic pain. And that is the key word. Chronic.
Right.
A lot of veterans have chronic pain in their lower back. It never goes away, no matter if
it's sitting around. That's what that chronic means.
Yeah, that chronic. And a lot of times what they don't realize when they're filing for compensation, Carrie, if they go through their medical records, it doesn't have to necessarily be your active duty records. But if you go through your medical records, you go to the VA hospital, you go to a private doctor, and you look in your medical records, you will see that word, chronic all the time. You'll see those two words, actually, chronic pain, veteran suffers from chronic pain. Anytime you see that you have chronic pain, what else can it cause, Carrie Hines? It can cause anxiety, depression. It's awful stuff, major depressive disorder. It can cause those type of mental health issues where you don't want to go outside, depression. You know, you don't want to go far distances. You don't want to drive that far because your back hurts. And
but you know what, Michael, we would never, I can honestly say, and I could imagine that the poor veterans would never even think that this is connected in that way.
Right.
So very good.
You're absolutely right. You know, and a lot of times, Carrie, what will happen, memory joggers. Sometimes when I'm talking to a vet, I have to do like memory joggers. And I might ask them a question, something like this. I might say, Veteran Carrie, when's the last time you picked up your grandkids? You would tell me you got a 2-year-old or 3-year-old grandchild. When was the last time you picked them up? And you would go, oh, my God. No, man, I can't pick my grandkids up. My back is just that bad. Boom, there it is right there. But a lot of times that's what a vet needs. They need a memory jogger. Even, you know, as we praise their families and the caregivers and everybody that's involved with a vet, even their observations, Carrie, can help with a secondary rating.
Wow.
I tell you.
So the family around you can, you know, they're observing what's going on with you, and this can be of assistance.
Right. And the thing about secondaries, when you're doing a secondary claim for compensation, believe it or not, that secondary claim for compensation sometimes can be a higher rating than the original rating you got. You may get a 20% rating, which is kind of average for a lower back rating. 20% is about average. But if you get a mental health diagnosis that's related to your lower back, that mental health diagnosis could be up to 100%. Most veterans average 70%, Carrie, just for a lower back with connected to your mental health.
Wow.
So it is possible, and it goes into other things that you, the individual veteran, can qualify for. And a matter of fact, Carrie, is a segue into number two.
Well, now we're on to number two. So I'm still excited by all of this, Michael Hopkins. And so let me just back it up a little bit for folks who are just joining us. Now, this is the Vet Talk Radio Show. Michael Hopkins is the host, and today he's talking about four lesser ways to get to 100%. Now, this is all about the lower back rating. This is very interesting to me and what you're covering, because I would have never thought that these were things that would lead or could lead to 100%. Interesting, Michael. Absolutely interesting. So you've been covering these four items, and now you're down to number two in this wonderful display today. So please, Michael. Please continue.
Number two, I think number two, Carrie, is another one of your favorites that we've talked about on the show.
Uh-oh.
And once again, a lot of veterans don't connect the dots with this one. And this one is total disability based upon individual unemployability. This is one of your favorites.
TDIU, yes, we know it well.
TDIU, yeah, very much so. And see, can you imagine, Carrie, you have a veteran, And we just, at number three, we just talked about that veteran gets a 70% mental health rating based upon their lower back. Look what door they just opened. They just opened individual unemployability with a 70% rating. They just opened up that door to a secondary, which they never would have thought of. Just like you said, most veterans would never think about doing this way.
Yeah, that's incredible.
It's a connected dots. And this is a beautiful connected dots because the TDIU, and we've talked about it before on the show, the TDIU can lead to a 100% rating.
That is I call the elusive 100% rating.
Right.
Just looking from the outside.
Yeah.
But, Michael, this is really helpful knowledge to the veterans. So now what do folks say? Like, you've worked with folks who you've talked to about this kind of thing. What has been their response?
Oh, I mean, it's been fantastic, Carrie. It really has. Because when I do like lectures, when we're having vet meetings, and what I do is I show the veterans how to connect the dots. Because it's just like you said, who would think of mental health being related to a lower back problem? Most vets don't, or to their knees, or to any of that. Most of the veterans don't think of that. And once I break it down for them, very simply, I don't use, $10 words and all this kind of mumbo jumbo and make it sound like it's some miracle. It's not a miracle. It just makes sense. You connect the dots. That's what claims are all about for veterans. It's connecting the dots. And part of connecting the dots is what, Carrie Hines? Medical evidence. That's
always medical. It comes down to what
medical
you can prove.
Medical evidence.
Yes.
You can prove
you it.
You can prove it. You can get rated for it.
Yeah.
That's why we have the CFR 38 Part 4. That is the Bible of Claims. It's the booklet all veterans should be going through, looking at, familiarize yourself with, because it has 833 items in there the individual veteran can get rated for. And lower back problems are one of them, and mental health is another one. It's all in there.
Well, I am just blown away, as always, with these, Michael. Again, four lesser ways to get to 100% with lower back rating. This tells me that that it is so connected and interconnected. And who would have thought this in this way? So this is very helpful information for the veterans. I'm just, as always, we are super excited about this, Michael. So listen, just give everybody a little recap on these items, and we're going to roll on in to number one.
Right. Well, Carrie, number four, that was your 100% scheduler rating.
Absolutely.
It's kind of rare, but that's your scheduler rating. The VA will grant you 100% due to your lower back issues.
Right. Number don't think we'll
three.
Ever forget that one.
Right. Oh, we won't forget that one. Yeah, it may be very rare. Now, Carrie, number three is that the secondary ratings. Once again, it's overlooked a lot of times with veterans. You can connect a secondary to your lower back issue, and that secondary can be a higher rating, and you can get to 100% that way.
Exactly. Wow. So this is really great, where the secondaries are very, very important.
Very important.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
What about number two?
Now, number two, Carrie, is we always talk about TDIU, better known as total disability based upon individual unemployability. That's another way.
I can sing it with you, Michael.
You can sing it with me. Oh, yeah. That's another way to get to 100%, and that particular 100% is through payment. You get paid at the 100% level.
Wow. Well, listen, Michael Hopkins, I tell you, I want to get to how important this is. I'm just dying to hear what number one is. So, Michael Hopkins, take it away. What's at number one?
Number one, Carrie, it's called a temporary 100% rating. That's what number one. And this one, oh, temporary, yes. And this one is, well, Carrie, this one's one, a rating that is definitely overlooked by a lot of veterans. It's definitely overlooked. And would you believe, Carrie, if you spend 21 days, like, in a hospital, in a veteran hospital, it could be in a regular hospital setting for an illness or an injury or surgery, and you spend at least 21 days in that facility. And then after you get out of the facility, you have to spend anywhere from 6 months to a year in rehabilitation.
Mm.
Your recovery. And we've seen that. Mm. How many times have we seen that with people? They get major surgery. They're out for the count for 6 months to a year.
For a while.
They can't work. They can't do anything. Even, Carrie, even if they're out for 2 months, 3 months, normally it's 6 months to a year, but the VA will say, hey, if you're out for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, we will grant you a temporary 100% rating. And you'll actually get paid at 100% rating, like every other veteran that's at 100%, that's permanent and total, or they're just 100% rated. The thing of it is.
Yeah, go ahead. Uh-huh. I think you were about to go exactly there, Michael.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe you were going to ask. No, go ahead, Carrie. Ask your question.
Well, no, I was just going to say, Michael, to me it's like, well, what happens at the end of that? Or is it, you know, you said temporary.
Oh,
well,
yeah, Carrie. And, yep.
Yeah, so that sounds like all good things must come to an end.
Must come to an end.
Michael.
And your question was, I was getting ready to answer your question. So I think we did a little psychic thing there, right?
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Well, this is what happens, Carrie Hines. Like you said, all good things must come to an end. What the VA does, the claim section, they send you through a reevaluation period. In other words, they go back, they look through your medical records, they may even send you to a claims and pension examination to see how you're doing, to see if you have recovered from whatever it is that happened to you. Say, for example, Carrie, I'll give you a good example, and this happened to one of our veterans. And a lot of Vietnam veterans have this issue. A lot of them have pancreatic cancer, or the pancreas, or the prostate. I'm sorry, wrong one. The prostate cancer.
Oh.
And a lot of them, due to exposure, the Agent Orange and all that, a lot of them will have prostate cancer. In the process, you know, of the prostate cancer, their prostate is actually surgically removed. And that causes other issues as far as removing the prostate. Well, what happens, they can get that 100% temporary rating. They'll get it for as long as it takes. If it takes a year for them to recover, they'll get it. They'll actually get the 100%. Now,
so they recuperate.
Right. When the VA feels as though you have recuperated, they'll send you through the series of tests, you know, as I said, C&P exam. They're going to check your medical records and so forth to see where you are. Now, two things can happen, Carrie Hines.
What are
if you still deserve the 100% rating because of whatever you had in this case, If you have residuals, you'll stay at the 100% rating if they deem that you're not over this and this is something that's going to be permanent and total for you as the individual veteran. You'll stay at the 100% rating.
Wow.
So you'll wind up being 100% PNT, and that'll be the end of that. So now, you know, it's permanent now. However, and I know you probably knew there was a however, isn't it? It's always a however.
Always a however.
Always a however. However, if the VA, i.e. the claim section, if they see that you are making progress, what they will wind up doing, their suggestion would be to return you to whatever original rating that you had prior to going into the hospital.
Mm.
Say, for example, your overall rating was 60%. Boom, they sent you to 100% for a whole year. After the year is up, you've gotten better. They'll make a determination, and that determination is to roll you back to that 60%.
Well, you know, when I hear you say this, Michael, it makes me think on behalf of the veterans. I'm so glad that you're covering this, because I think that the veterans should keep this in mind, that this is a potentiality or a possibility or something that could happen. So, you know, it doesn't catch you off guard or you know, not realizing it. That's why I love all of these things. I absolutely love you taking the time to educate and inform everybody. I think the veterans, I think this is the very least we can do through the show. Outstanding.